So we'll get started in just a moment once everybody's had a chance to get settled. In the meantime, I'll tell you a little bit about where this track came from and what it does. So about 6 years ago, American Scientific Affiliation was looking for more ways to support students and early career folks and build more programming into the network. And I was working with InterVarsity's Emerging Scholars Network, where I'm associate director. And we were looking for ways to have in-person national conferences that could connect people in the sciences, because, you know, you might not know a bunch of people in your own subfield in your grad Christian fellowship or whatever. And sometimes it's nice to have those conversations and the broader interdisciplinary ones. And someone introduced me to the folks at ASA, and I said, wow, they have a great national science conference already and a pool of people who like to mentor. And we have a pool of people who would like to be mentored and go to a National Faith and Science Conference. Our statements of faith are really similar. This would be a great idea to connect. So we've been doing that for about 6 years now. It's been really exciting to watch it grow. And I would definitely welcome your thoughts and ideas on what we can do in the future and how we can shape it in ways that will help you across the course of your early career. And I'll also ask, how many people are currently in grad school? Lots of you, great. And how many of you are thinking about it? Also a pretty good number. So Emergent Scholars Network is a part of InterVarsity, and our goal, it's digital first, and our goal is to support you across that whole arc of considering whether you should go to grad school, being in grad school, becoming faculty, or taking those skills to industry, wherever God calls you. And so to that end, we have a blog with a lot of writing about working in your early career, connecting faith and work and growing spiritually. And we have digital events. We have monthly interviews with authors of recent books that are interesting to Christian scholars and other one-time panels on preparing for grad school or mental health in grad school or other topics of interest. And it's totally free to sign up, so I'll send you a follow-up email. You can click the link and fill out a very short form and join if you'd like, and you'll get a monthly email with those opportunities, and sometimes with opportunities like this to come to an in-person conference. Deb, can you describe briefly some of your own writing for ESN before we kick off?
Sure. I'm Dave Osberg. I'm an organic chemist. I'm a molecule maker, and so I've talked about creativity and also engaging in scientific conversations with undergrads, because my wife is an InterVarsity Christian Fellowship staff worker at the same campus that I am. And so how to have those conversations, even when you have different perspectives, how to foster positive conversations. That's some of the stuff that I've written about.
Yeah, so you can look Dave up on the blog and read some of his work there. Welcome, Veronica. Have a seat. All right, well, we will kick off our panel today. We're so delighted that you can join us. And I'll start with some panelist introductions. So Veronica Perez is in ecology and is doing some amazing work and thinking through caring for the environment. And she was also recently, her work was covered in Smithsonian and the New York Times and a bunch of other exciting places. So ask her about sea lions and forests when you get a chance later. And
she's in more than penguins.
And penguins, yes. Don't forget the penguins. Good point. Esmond Lee is our next person, and Esmond is working, has just finished his PhD at Stanford, so congratulate him if you get a chance. And is in medically related research. And Esmond will also be our early career awardee this year, so we're celebrating him at Stanford as well. And Esmond has also done a lot of work supporting conversations on faith and work for scientists and other scholars. Matthew Morris is a professor and biologist, and he studies a fish called the three-spined stickleback. And I said, oh, I had a children's book about the three-spined stickleback. And he said, yes, you wouldn't believe how many children's books there are about the kind of fish I study. So you can ask him for the list if you want that. And Matthew is also a member of Canadian Scientific and Christian Affiliation, the expression of the ASA in Canada. So ask him about next year when CSCA will be hosting the conference for its 50th anniversary. And then finally, Dave Vosburg, who you briefly met already. Dave does green chemistry and pharmacology applications at Harvey Mudd, and has also written a guide to faith and science and a number of other things for Christian scholars. So we'll have about a half hour of conversation with our panelists, and then we'll break into small groups, and I'll give you instructions on that in when we get to that point. Let's see, one other introduction. Denise Margaret Thompson, my colleague at InterVarsity. Denise heads Black Scholars and Professionals for IB, so make sure and chat with her. Denise also has two PhDs in engineering and founded the Caribbean Fine Cocoa Forum, so ask her about all that. All right, well, let's kick off today. So one thing we've been thinking a lot about is how you connect your faith and your work, and that's highly individual. It's kind of different for everybody. By the way, can you hear me in the back through the mask? I can project a little more if necessary. It's going, okay, working. All right, so one thing we talk a lot about is how do you connect faith and your academic work? And so each of our panelists is going to share one way that they do it, and these are models or springboards to help you think about your own ways of doing it. They might be very different, they might be kind of similar. It's always interesting to find out. So Veronica, would you kick us off with one way that you connect faith and work in your life?
Sure. Yeah, it was hard for me at first to kind of come up with an answer, just thinking in terms of, well, academically or personally. And so I'm gonna choose the personal route. And it's because I really believe that, like, God's hand is in everyone's work. This is why we call it a calling, a vocation. And I truly do believe in the power of prayer and even just like my productivity. When I know that I'm not being very productive, I want to question, where am I with the Lord? Because if I'm doing God's work, then I should have the energy to do it. And I'm a PhD student. I'm in my fifth year. And yeah, there's just kind of like, you know, like if God is anointing what we do, the God's presence should be in everything that we do. When I'm working on an application, even if maybe I don't actually get that scholarship or something, I'm still going to pray over it because I want God's will to be on it. When I'm submitting a paper, I pray before I submit it. And I know that these are the moments where we're the most nervous. Is it actually ready? And so like, I just try to pray over what it is that I do. And also just even like, I believe that there are divine revelation even in what we have. And just like, if God is calling us to do science and we're at the edge of research, we're at the edge of knowledge and to discover these new things, then why wouldn't that discovery come from his divine knowledge too, right? So we're kind of entering the divine as we are going into our research. And so I want him to be with me along the way.
I really love that foundation of thinking about discovering God's creation through your work, and prayer is such a profound but also very doable thing that you can weave into your work. I really like that. Desmond, how about you?
Yeah, when I think of faith and work, I think of restoration. I'm in regenerative medicine, where we engineer cells as living therapies that we can then bring to the patient as definitive cures for debilitating disease. And how I think of my role is kind of like a restorer of art, where you have an old painting that has a bunch of dust and cobwebs. And what we want to do is to make the color shine bright again, not necessarily to add more to how it was, but to just bring it back to its original glory. And I think that's the role of medicine as a field, to kind of help patients back to a state of health and vibrancy. And I think this also parallels what God's work is in this world, to bring restoration to a place that is it fallen in some ways, and through Christ making it new. And I think that's one way I can see faith and work tying together. Also, in terms of when I look at disease, kind of the complexity of how genes are regulated, promoters nearby, transcription factors from further away, exons and introns, and how they're spliced together to make different kind of gene isoforms that increases variation. I think that points me to how beautifully and wonderfully we will make.
I love that sense of restoration too, kind of exploring God's creation and then also restoration and redemption. Really wonderful way to think about it. Matthew, how about you? One way you connect faith and work.
Sure. Well, so I work at a Christian liberal arts university where part of what we do is to integrate science and faith in our teaching. So I have students, and maybe this reflects some of your own experiences, but students who came out of high school where church taught them religion and school taught them science, or if they went to a Christian high school, they had a religion class and a science class, and they compartmentalized those two things, kept them separate without anybody guiding them through how to address difficult questions of potential conflict between those areas, or even just to think about worship and wonder and all of these aspects of science that they could bring into their faith. So I'm actually required in my job to integrate science with my with faith. And I think I not only am I required to, but I think I have to just teach the students science effectively. So I teach ecology. All my students have to take ecology as it's a required course, and many of them wish that it wasn't, because they don't know why ecology matters. Right? They want to go off into med school. I know, right? It's shocking. They want to go off to med school. They don't understand the relationship between human flourishing and healthy ecosystems. And so bringing the faith aspect, showing them where it sort of impinges upon, say, their understanding of scripture, their understanding of Christian ethic, environmental stewardship, it helps them understand why ecology is something not just for ecologists, but for all Christians. Mm. So for instance, you know, conservation biology uses scientific tools, but it's really enforcing an ethic. And my students, they don't initially understand, like, what's the foundation for that ethic? And really there isn't much of a foundation for that, but Christianity can bring something in. It can provide a foundation for a conservation ethic, right? We're thinking about the flourishing of neighbor and love of neighbor, and how our bodies are ecosystems. And when they're out of balance, when our gut biota is out of whack, we can get sick. And so there's all these different little touch points, or even things like how species are distributed on the planet, and how that conflicted with early flood models of dispersal out of, you know, the Middle East. They never thought about ecology as being in conflict with certain interpretations of scripture. So you're just sort of poking them a bit with these sorts of things, helps them to both get excited about ecology and start to figure out ways in which science integrates with their own sort of faith journey. And if I could just say, well, I'll say on the flip end, I thought that this would be easy for everybody who's a Christian to get in and teach science and faith in an integrated fashion. I have sat on a lot of job panels where a lot of people who want to work at Ambrose, when they're asked the question, how do you integrate faith and science, they fall flat on their face. There are Christians who also haven't thought about how to integrate science and faith together and how to bring that into the classroom. So if those of you who are looking to work at a university, be prepared to answer that question. Think carefully through how you would integrate science and faith in the classroom, and saying, you know, I'll read a Bible verse at the beginning of class isn't what we're looking for. You know, that's okay. It's good, but it's not enough. You want to really think about how your discipline contributes to the faith science discussion.
That's great. And I'm sure Matthew would be happy to chat more with you about how he came to his own integration of science and faith there. If you get a chance to talk to him later in the conference, and I know a few of you are considering Christian college careers, so that would be great.
Can I just bounce off of that real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, so I also want to say, like, when I'm listening to you, I'm at a secular university, and I plan to become a professor in a secular university as well, like a major, like I'm at Michigan State University, like major research and such. But one thing, like, as well as that, this contemplation of integration of science and faith, it's not just for in a Christian college for Christian students. Like, I'm a student who's also speaking to Christian communities about creation care, and I'm also being challenged with these kinds of reflections. And so they see me as a researcher, and it's the Christian community that knows me for my character and my calling and my following of Christ that they come to me and say, we would like for you to speak to us about what does the gospel, how does this relate to the gospel, or how does, like, what does God want us to do for this, like, biodiversity crisis or climate change. And so, so whether it is at a Christian university or at a secular, like, university, those kinds of reflections are still necessary, not just for, like, the students, but also for society. And it's really awesome as well.
I love that connection, Veronica. I agree wholeheartedly. It's really important in whatever setting we're in. Dave, how do you connect to faith and work?
Sure. Well, I could, so as a synthetic chemist, a molecule maker, I could talk about creativity in a Tolkien-esque sense of being a sub-creator below God, the head creator. Or I could, as a green chemist, talk about creation care and you know, trying to reduce hazards and polluting the environment. So, and I could do that. But I think I'll talk instead about gathering a group of Christian faculty across a group of secular colleges, which is what I do on a weekly basis during the semester, where we talk about faith and academics in a very dynamic way. And we have, you know, over 100 people on the list that are faculty, just, you know, local environment in the Claremont area. And it's just so awesome to be a part of that sort of fellowship of people from totally different disciplines, different campuses, and so on. But it's just really fun to interact together in a dynamic way, a little bit like it was described, what will heaven be like? That's like a little small taste of that for me. A faculty from all different backgrounds, all different disciplines, you know, different ethnic groups and genders and so on. And it's just really fun to wrestle together with some topics that impact us as academics, not just scientists, as Christians together. And again, we have Catholics and Orthodox and, you know, Protestants and so on, which is really fun, to Mormons sometimes. To do that together has just been really fun in a dynamic way to help not just myself flourish, but the whole community through connection flourishing together.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and that emphasis on community is so important too. And I know a lot of you already gather in community with other Christians and think about these things, but great to find more as you can too. Well, that leads well into our next question, which is about growing as a whole person in your work in science. And we'll especially focus on Veronica and Matthew in this question, and then the next one we'll address to Esmond and Dave. They all have fantastic things to say about all of this, but sadly, we live in time and not eternity, so we have to keep rolling. So, Veronica, I think you've already alluded to this a little bit, but I imagine as an ecologist who thinks about whole systems and how things fit together, that this may be an especially compelling question to you. But how do you think about growing as a whole person in our science? You're growing as a scholar in your work, but you're also cultivating virtues and growing in the whole of yourself in your work. And how do you think about that?
Yeah, so actually last time I was here, well, not physically here, but last time I was actually at an InterVarsity early career panel at ASA. It was my first ASA meeting. And I remembered listening to people who were sitting here, just like me right now. And like my biggest question that I had, and you might even remember it, which is like, you know, like academia is just very selfish in many ways. It's about your ambition. It's about your name. It is about you going and like being that one person who can do something, gathering grants, showing that you're the best of the best. And it's like, how can I have ambition and still be a follower of Christ, you know? And it really perplexed me, especially my first year of my PhD. I do want to say as well, like I worked on commercial fishing boats for 9 years and like I spent a lot of time toughening up. And I thought that being tough was what was going to help me to make it in this world. And that was my way of doing it. And so my first year and a half of my PhD, I came with that same attitude. I mean, I went through my master's that way, that I was just like, if I can be tough, I can make it. If I can just prove, like wiggle my way through, it's hard enough to get here as first generation, underrepresented Christian woman in science. You know, I wasn't even thinking about being a Christian woman in science. I was just thinking about being a woman in science. And again, it was a lot of the me, because I was seeing everyone around me and I was seeing people like me quit, leave, get depressed, all this stuff. And I said, it's not going to be me. But during my PhD, I've actually found that Christ is calling me to become humble. And it is actually when I would be the most vulnerable that he has worked the most in me and also has shown me that I can still flourish. And so it is when I'm extremely tired and I'm working on a side project that I wanted to quit, and it was the third round of review, and reviewer number 2 was horrible. I'm like, what's going on? And like, I just was like, you know, like no sleep. It's all, it's this time of weakness when I'm like, okay, God, I'm just going to do it, even though I really just don't care anymore. And then he says, well done. You've believed in me. Now you see it's not about you. And then next thing you know, I didn't even do any of the work. You know, maybe I'll tweet my research, but everybody else was talking about my research. Like my paper that I did that was about sea lions and got all this kind of attention. Like I really didn't do much to help it get attention. And that's because that's God's work. And if God wants, if he wants that work to be seen, he will be doing the work. So it's other people doing it. And it was really cool because I could, not that I could rest, I'm still a PhD student, but it's, but I don't have to feel as guilty about my side project that I did either. And I also, I don't know, it just like would humble me. And so like, I also get humbled by like funding, for example. And, you know, when you feel like you don't have any support, a lot of times there were, I was finding, like I had kind of this strange relationship with my advisor that I was realizing was actually a result of a lot of issues that I've had with men, just not trusting men. Never, I don't know my father, like hardly at all. I've had a lot of stepfathers, just like this history of just having bad, like mentorship, father figures, people just trying to speak into my life that were like just very few men who I could really trust, and also working on boats with fishermen. Like, and so I just kept not trusting my advisor. And I realized that God was like, the way you behave is also the way you see me. You don't trust me. When you start to trust me, you'll see that I'm also taking care of you. I'm providing for you. And actually my advisor, I find out he does things for me that I don't even see. Like he'll surprise me with something. He'll say, hey, I talked to the university and I got you some funding, or I did this, I did that. And it's like, and it constantly humbles me. And I see that like, yeah, like I can't, I'm not called to do my PhD my way. I'm not called to work in the world and work for him my way. I'm called to be vulnerable. I'm called to trust. And yeah, and so that's kind of who I'm becoming during my PhD.
Mm.
And I think that that's a different kind of leadership that we need in this broken world. And I've also been broken, but I'm being healed through it. And so I'm grateful for what God's doing. And hopefully he'll use it. Oh, I know he's using it, but.
Oh, that's a wonderful description, Veronica. That's so encouraging. Dave, how about you? Or Matthew. I'm so sorry, misread my notes. Matthew.
Yeah, so I would say faculty positions are demanding. They want approximately 70% of your time teaching, 40% in community service, and 100% in research. It doesn't work. And I'm a father. I have 3 young kids, ages 4, 6, and 8. I'm a husband. I have a church community. In order to be a whole person, I can't do it all in work. I can't. My identity can't be wrapped up solely in my job. That is work is secondary to being a father. You know, my dad was never home. He was a workaholic, so he was never home for supper. So I've made that a primary thing. Like, I'm going to be home for supper. Being at a conference without my family right now, this is a very rare thing for me. I'm normally quite protective of dinner time. So if the university schedules a lab that's going to run through, you know, past 6 o'clock and my kids go to bed at 7, I can't do that. You're going to have to change the time. So learning early, you know, in an early career, you can feel quite vulnerable and that you have to say yes to everything that the university is requesting of you. I think if you're upfront about your reasons why you cannot do this, they're willing to listen. At least I'm just lucky enough to be at a university that's willing to listen. They say, I cannot teach at those hours. I'm sorry, I can't. I'm not going to be answering emails on weekends. If you have a deadline for a Sunday, I am not going to do it. I'm sorry. So those sorts of things. And I've had support from the dean in a lot of respect for being upfront about, if you're just like sulky about it and I just don't want to do that. But when you're saying, no, I'm a husband and a father, and these are the bounds in which I will offer you myself, but I also need these other things, and it'll actually make me a better teacher. And it will, I won't be burnt out in my job after my first year when I have my family to engage with and keep me whole. So I think wholeness isn't identified just in your job. You need the sort of rounded work-life balance.
Well, that's such a helpful perspective. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, these are really great big picture ideas, and it's so wonderful to hear the panel talk about them. Probably you also have some practical questions about how you figure out the next steps in your career, wherever you are. Maybe you're in high school heading to college. Maybe you're an undergrad trying to decide between grad school or industry or another option. Maybe you're somewhere in the graduate school early professor continuum. And so I've asked Esmond and Dave to share with us about how they think about charting next steps. Esmond is obviously at a moment of life when he's doing that transition from the PhD to the next thing. And Dave has advised a lot of people on these steps and made great processes himself in making these decisions. So I think they'll have great things to tell us. So Esmond, how do you think about charting next steps? What's something you found really helpful as you made that transition?
Yeah. My path has been fairly non-linear, and I did not want to be a cell biologist when I was in elementary school. In fact, I wanted to be a potato farmer,
but
it's gone through a few iterations. And, you know, I think when I think about it, it's a lot about flexibility sometimes. What life situation are you in? And then you bring it to God and you say, oh, these I think are my passions and where you may have gifted me. What doors will you open for me? And which one do you want me to walk through? And one most recent example would be where to go after grad school. And the default had always been that I'm gonna go home to Singapore to start a postdoc. And I have not done that. And that was before I met my significant other, Hannah. And, you know, that's a great thing, but it changed the calculus. And so then I began to think, oh, I should look for opportunities to stay around. And I think God has been very gracious and opened the doors for me to remain so that we can be physically together. And also I can continue to train in the Bay Area. I think another thing is like preparation. I learned recently that if you're applying for a postdoc or faculty position, apply a year or more in advance. You're looking for industry, maybe 2 or 3 months is enough. And they have different processes and different kind of ways of doing things. So just preparing yourself for those, asking as many questions as you can, I think is important. Speaking to your supervisor, but also the team that you'll be working with, because culture is like, super important. And if it's an in-person job, I felt that like visiting the place, kind of like getting a vibe for how it's like, it's a great thing to do. And lastly, I'd say remember that you are loved by God and also by the people, your friends and family who just love you for who you are, because transition can be a time of uncertainty. And I think you need that assurance. And I'm reminded of Christ as well. As he was baptized, you know, the Spirit of God came on him like a dove. The Father said, this is my Son, whom I'm well pleased. And this was way before Jesus started any ministry. He hadn't done a single miracle, and that's the Father's heart for him. And we have that same Father. So when I am reminded of that, that's really gets me through that, you know, uncertainty. And I'm not sure where God is leading me. Where am I going to land up? I'm reminded of that.
Oh, those are such important points. Flexibility and operating from the foundation of God's love. And yeah, that's wonderful. Dave, how about you? What's something that helps you think about next steps for yourself and when you're advising others?
Sure. I think I'm gonna do the community note again. And so like having like a prayer partner whom I've had since I started my faculty position, we meet weekly for lunch and prep Francis, so he's actually speaking tomorrow morning here. So talking with him, with my wife as well, with my home Bible study group, with other folks that I trust as well, that kind of know me as well as kind of my heart and what opportunities there might be ahead of me. That was true in undergrad, thinking about grad school. That was true in grad school, thinking about postdocs. That's true for various opportunities? Should I accept this offer or this nomination or whatever it is? Is this something I should pursue, or should I do something else? Should I put my efforts in some other thing? And so I think that's been a huge thing for me, is that community aspect. And not trusting just in my own desires, and I can't do everything. Like Matthew said, you can't do everything. And you realize that more and more, you can't do everything. As you get older, there are more and more things you didn't do, and you're glad that that's the case. And there are other folks that can do some of those things. And it's going to be good for them to step into those roles as well. You don't need to gather all the glory for yourself, as Veronica was saying. Like, there is a temptation, in academia in particular, to be very self-glorifying. And resisting that culture is sometimes a challenge. But doing it with others can be easier than trying to do it alone.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. I wish we had even more time to bask in your wisdom, and are very grateful for your thoughts. And hopefully you'll get to connect with the folks in the audience later in the conference too. Could we give our panel a round of applause?